So we're doing these cold opens now. I don't know that we've done a cold open with a guest.
I don't think so. No, we did with Kat.
Well, now we're doing one with Jen. Remember Jen?
I do.
I do too. Trivia star Jen.
Hey, sorry, it's so early. Still, I'm like waking up.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it is 10:30, but it's 9:30 for Jen. This is the last episode I will be recording before I go on my trip.
How many episodes are there left in this season?
Two. So they will have come out by the time I'm back from my trip, so we will have to record like immediately when I get back.
Jet lagged and everything.
Jet lagged and everything. But at least we'll have it so while I'm away vacationing, y'all will have content. Look, we brought you some content. We made you some content. So here we are recording on this Sunday morning.
Yeah, at 9:30 in the morning.
I know the energy is tired right now, but
listen, it's fine. I'm drinking coffee. I'll kick in about 10 minutes and then we'll be at the peak in about 15.
I feel like that's my fun fact, is that this is my last episode recording before Korea. Who else has a fun fact?
I have a fun fact.
All right, hit us.
I was shocked and betrayed again. This is the second day in a row that Mac has texted me something and then been like, oh, wait, no. This time it was being like, oh, the movie Pearls on HBO. When she fully knew that I have been waiting with bated breath to watch that movie on a streaming service. And then she goes, oh, wait, no, it's on Redbox. Sorry.
Well, to be fair, no. When I was looking at it on the intranets, the little logo looked very similar to the HBO logo. And I was like, oh, my God, Abigail's going to be so excited. And then I sent that text and then immediately regretted.
Is that the one with Mia Goth?
Yes.
She has an insane accent. I'm obsessed with her.
I love her. She's unhinged. Pearl is like the sequel to X, but it's a prequel. And then Maxine is coming out like next year, I think, which is the third one in the trilogy, which picks up right where X left off.
So I broke Abigail's heart, and she was so distraught, she sent me a voice memo, you know, so I'm just a fuck up.
It's fine. I just watched Fire Island instead.
I have to watch that.
You do need to watch Fire Island.
All right, Jen, what's your fucking fun fact?
I guess that I started my last semester ever of school this week.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean, hopefully my last ever semester. I'm in the last year of my master's, let's just say that.
Congratulations. I still have 2 years of mine.
It gets worse before it gets better, but then it gets better.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
By the way, if this is your first time joining us, this is Unsubs a Criminal Minds podcast.
Oh, yeah.
The podcast where we recap, rate, and review all of Criminal Minds, whether we like it or not. And we do have rating criteria that we rate each episode with. So it's 5 different categories. Each category can score a total of 20 points. So 5 times 20 is 100. The categories are criminal/serial killer. What do we think of them? Do we like them? Do we like her? Do we like them? character development slash character arcs. This is strictly the main cast, though. Then we got forensics and context. So that's specifically the crimes. How are they solved? What are the profiles, if there are any? Then we have script writing. So script writing being, did we like the script? Did we find it believable? And then finally, background characters. So this is where the Tawnies go. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Love Tawny.
And then, Abigail, do you want to share our disclaimer before we bully Jen into sharing this recap that she so kindly wrote for us?
Oh, yeah. We are in no way, shape, or form professionally associated with Criminal Minds or anything therein. But we would like to be. So please don't send us a cease and desist.
Please don't, Erica.
Erica, please.
Erica, we'll send you some PILF merch.
Oh, yeah, we do have new merch.
We do have new merch. We've got PILF merch. We've got, hold on.
Deputy Doug Bailey apologist merch.
The Foyette shirt had me screaming.
We've got one that says, like, Mosley Lane, Lauren, Heathridge Manor, and The Lesson. So, like, some of the best Goobs-directed episodes. We've got Deputy Doug Bailey apologist. We've got Justice for Moose. We've got George Foyette was in love with Aaron Hochner. And then we have PILF. And these are all written in papyrus. Then we have all of our old stuff as well. So check that out. But let's get into this recap for whatever this episode is called. Oh, Forget Me Nots. It's called Forget Me Nots.
Okay. So we pick up kind of right where we left off last episode. So after finding the man he believes to be Sicarius, Rossi brings footage from Tawny's hardware store to Garcia, but there's no way to run facial recognition on it because he's wearing a hat that's covering most of his face.
Yeah, he is obscured.
No way that they're going to be able to get anything from that. When Rossi keeps pushing Garcia to do more, she calls him out and he apologizes, saying he knows she didn't get enough sleep last night.
More.
That is not how this works.
Penelope, just do it.
There. We cannot get anything about his face from this data.
Look, I'm sorry that we have to do this. I know that you didn't get any sleep last night.
How do you know I didn't get any sleep last night?
You drink a third cup of tea when you've had a bad night's sleep. Work stress?
Yes. Yes, work stress.
Okay, now I know it's not that. But whatever it is, it doesn't compare to this.
Of course, this was true, since she was up having steamy nerd sex with Tyler.
Oh my god. I should put that on a t-shirt.
But Rossi notices because she was on her third cup of tea of the day, which is something she historically only does when she doesn't get enough sleep from the night before. I love that they can't, like, not profile all the time. So it's like, because this happens later on too.
They don't know that she was having steamy nerd sex with Tyler, to be fair. Like, they just know that she was
right. They don't know that it's Tyler.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though they can't identify Sicarius on tape, Rossi notices that he's reaching for his pocket multiple times and says he's not reaching for his wallet. He's already paid. What the hell is he up to? That was a bad Rossi voice, but...
What the hell is he up to?
So then we cut to Elias Voight in Indio, California, which for the geographically impaired is just north of Coachella in the southern part of the state.
That is us, the geographically impaired.
I've been to California and I couldn't have told you where that was. I was born in California and I couldn't have told you where that was.
Are you saying that you're a California girl?
I mean, I was born in California, but...
California girl.
Oh my god, Abigail. Also, fuck Daddy Voight for being like, this is my plan. This is the worst plan ever. Like, go talk to your fucking wife. I'm so over him. I've, like, switched. I've done a full switch. I've done a 180.
Why?
Because I'm so sick and tired of men disrespecting their wives.
Yeah, that's fair.
If Deputy Doug had a wife, he wouldn't treat her like this. I could guarantee you that.
No, she would be his queen.
Yeah, that's very true.
I just took a sip of coffee and I almost spat it out when you said that. Because I was like, so true.
Yeah. No, this plan is so, like, counter everything that he's done. I feel like he's like, this is a great plan. Like, I'm never going to get caught. And I'm like, did you really think about this? He's watching as a real estate agent named Ramona, who looks very similar to his wife, Sydney, gets out of her car and walks into her office. He then calls her and introduces himself as Lee.
Good day. This is Ramona.
Hey, Ramona. It's Lee.
Hey there, Lee. I missed you at the open house on Bexel.
Yeah, that's actually what I was calling about. I was hoping you might have some time for a walkthrough this afternoon, maybe?
You're in luck. I am free. What time were you thinking?
Whatever works for you.
Okay, let's say 2:30?
2:30. Perfect. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'll see you there.
Yeah.
Now we cut to the Giroux LaMontagne household. And they're getting ready for school and work. Michael, who has a really interesting haircut.
Yeah, that was challenging.
It's like a mullet.
That was challenging. I feel like that's unfortunately like in style for, I don't know, kids his age. Yeah, I mean, I have like a hard time saying much because it's like this is, I don't know, her kid in real life.
Oh, really?
Both of her kids on the show are her kids in real life, which is why they look so much like her. Anyway, Michael, his mullet, and Henry head off to the bus. And JJ and Will check in with each other about the Sicarius case and then about Will's most recent tests.
You got any new leads on Sicarius?
There's someone named Cyrus and some benign surveillance footage, but really nothing else solid.
How's Dave doing?
Losing it. We can't catch a break.
You will. It's only a matter of time before this guy slips up.
Not so sure. His body count is staggering. And there might be another one of those buried containers and... You know what? That's enough of that. Your turn. Please give me some good news.
Well, the doc called and my levels have stabilized. So no more tests for 6 months.
That is good news.
Yeah.
Did Dr. Harvey give you a printout of the labs?
No, they were on the portal. There were too many panels. You can log on there if you want.
Oh, what's the password?
A laptop, remember, so I don't have to.
Right.
At this point, Henry comes back into the house having forgotten a textbook, but Will and JJ don't hear him. Obviously, they hadn't told Henry about any of this because the kid's like snooping hardcore. And so now we jump back to California and Elias is meeting with Ramona. They bond over their kids. Elias shows her a pic of his daughters. And Ramona says that she has a boy and a girl. Elias is posing as a father looking for a new house for his family and says that Indio is the change of scenery that they're looking for, but that the house seems to be a little small. So he asks for something bigger and with a workspace if possible. And Ramona offers to drive him to another listing with a view of the mountains.
Do you have kids?
I do. A boy and a girl.
Oh.
One is in the midst of adolescent agony. But that's part of the deal, right?
Yeah, that's what they say. Honestly, I'm kind of hoping a change of scenery will be good for me and the family. Mm. I just don't think this is the place. It feels a little small.
So you're thinking another bedroom?
Yeah, and maybe like a workspace? Also, I don't know if this is even possible, but I know that my wife would just love a view of the mountains.
Okay, yes. I know exactly the place you're looking for.
Really?
It's over on Windridge.
Uh-huh.
I can show it to you now.
Right now?
Absolutely.
I took a ride share over here, so just give me the address and I'll meet you over there.
No, no, I'll take you there.
No, that is above and beyond.
Seriously, that's what I do.
Next thing she knows, Ramona is waking up strapped to a chair in one of Elias's storage containers. He tells her that he has killed 61 people, and he offers her a chance to live by helping him save his marriage.
Really got me. I was like, what is he going? What is happening? He's like, save my marriage. Also, like, sorry, I have to bring this up. I know we're trying to keep ourselves concise and tight today, but you guys saw that article about how he was in a Taylor Swift music video, right? That actor?
Yes. Yes.
And like, he didn't know who Taylor Swift was. You look at his face and you're like, yeah, he wouldn't know who Taylor Swift is. And I think it's hysterical.
Also, I want to point out that this whole setup is that, like, Daddy Voight tells Ramona that he took a ride share over, which we know is not true because my man has a car. But he's, like, buttering her up. He's getting her alone. He's showing her all these pictures of his family being like, yeah, I want to do something nice for my wife to, like, get her to trust him so that, like, they get in the car together, which I thought was really, like, clever.
Yeah, it's the duality of that man.
Like, she probably looked at him and was like, this motherfucker doesn't know who Taylor Swift is. There's no way he's going to hurt me.
Back at Quantico, Emily is looking milfy as usual and is visited by Captain Paul Ballard from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Sexton Chief Prentice.
Captain Ballard.
Call me Paul, please.
Only if you call me Emily. Appreciate you coming all the way up here from Raleigh.
Well, I know your BAU is looking at a suspect named Cyrus in connection with the Sicarius investigation. But I also know the Sicarius investigation is closed, officially speaking. So I thought it best to make a personal appearance, just in case I need to hard sell a few upper management suits into helping out with my State Bureau of Investigation.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a Cyrus LeBrun. Died last week. Kidney failure. Lived out in the woods by himself near Falls Lake. Body wasn't actually found until he'd missed a couple doctor's appointments. Anyway, when the sheriff got out there, he said the place gave him the creeps. So he called us in.
Really?
Yeah. We luminoled. And the living room lit up like the 4th of July.
DNA?
We ID'd at least 4 victims, one of which was Maria Jones, the victim in the Silvio Herrera case.
Ballard came to Emily because Cyrus's cabin had traces of DNA of several victims, including Maria Jones, who was the victim of the Silvio Herrera case from the previous weeks. Ballard said that it's possible that LeBrun evolved into Sicarius, and he's requesting that the BAU look into it, even though the case is closed. Emily's, like, obviously ready to keep going at Sicarius, so she's like, hell yeah, let's do it.
And Deputy Doug, the actor who played him, wasn't contracted for this episode, so there's no one to stand in the way. Notice how he wasn't in this episode?
Oh, wait, you're right, yeah.
I mean, of course you would notice that. I felt like it wasn't, like, necessary for him to be in this episode, though, also.
Wow. Them's fighting words.
I am a changed person. Like, the last couple episodes, I'm like, wow, I actually really like him now.
Well, good news for you is you can buy a Deputy Doug apologist t-shirt.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I don't think he's, like, the worst person ever now. Anyway, Tara and Luke determine that the victims don't really fit into the Sicarius profile, but Garcia finds out that Cyrus took custody of his nephew, Lee, after his parents were killed in an apartment fire on 2nd Street. They've now put it together that Lee is probably Sicarius, given that Lee was the name that was used with Tyler's sister before she went missing. After Garcia doesn't make any snarky quips at Luke, he concludes that she must be getting some.
Yes.
As, like, somebody who very much enjoys Garcia and Luke as a ship, I was like, wow, this is kind of heartbreaking, actually.
Do you like Tyler and Garcia, though?
Yeah, I do. I do. I do like them together, and I'm glad that she's, like, happy, but I also think, like, that's going to come back to screw everything up in the end. We'll see. So, back at the LaMontagne household.
Hey, Mom.
Yeah?
Is Dad okay? Like, really okay?
Why are you asking that?
Never mind.
Hey, no. Hey, what's that face? What's going on?
You avoided the answer. It's a simple yes or no. If there's something else going on, I want to know. So you're not just saying it's okay to make me feel better?
I'm not.
Promise?
Henry asks if Will is okay, and then she avoids the answer. So Henry says that he wants to know what's going on. JJ assures him that Will is okay, but when he goes up to his bedroom, he searches for the name of the doctor that he had overheard from the conversation that morning and discovers that she is an oncologist. And then he learns what an oncologist is.
I just realized it does make sense that they're having, like, her actual children play, given that, like, they were in her belly when she was pregnant in the show anyways. Like, oh yeah, the timing would work out. I'm so slow this morning.
And then, like, by doing that, obviously, like, they age appropriately, I suppose. And then you, like, don't have to keep recasting kids and stuff.
Yeah, also, I think that Henry does a really good job, the actor who plays him. You know, he comes from good stock.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, he does just fine, even if he's not, like, quote-unquote, like, an actor.
I'm not a parent, so, like, parents who listen to this podcast, let us know. I thought it was a little unfortunate that JJ wasn't, like, not completely 100% transparent, but wasn't, like, didn't acknowledge a little bit of what was going on, especially if they're still finding things out, but they know that, like, Will is not in grave danger. And I thought, because she is more progressive, that she was going to be like, yeah, you know, we're getting some test results, but he's going to be fine.
I understand why she didn't, though. Apparently, when I was very young, both my parents had some health scares, and they did not tell either my sister or I about it until they had, like, all the tests done and all the answers.
I mean, I think that my parents were, like, pretty open with me about stuff like that, so it's, like, definitely a different style of parenting.
I understand not wanting to add extra stress if they don't know for sure, though.
I also get, like, with JJ's job, there's, like, not much that she is, like, allowed to say. But I would have thought, like, you would have at least known that she was in the explosion. Like, even though she was, like, fine in the end, like, how did that, like, not come up at all?
I'm still mad about that. I think the word I've been using is, it's absolutely ludicrous.
Back at the storage container, Elias tries some roleplay shit with Ramona to play out him, like, coming back home and telling Sydney the truth about who he is and how he's tortured and killed people.
Honey, I'm so happy you're home.
Oh, no, that's bullshit. You would never talk to me like that, never. It's been you and two kids for over a week. What do you say?
What do you want me to say?
You know what I want you to say. That's why I picked you. Okay. Last chance. Oh, honey, I'm home.
Fucking son of a bitch! Why are you doing this to me? I would never treat you this way. I would never treat anyone this way.
Thank you. Thank you. Now you're finally getting somewhere.
He also says that he really thinks he can change, but only if he has her and the girls with him. Elias says he doesn't want to hurt his kids, and Ramona tells him that if he wants her to stay, he'll have to earn it.
Would you hurt my babies?
Our babies? I don't know. I don't want to.
Do you remember in the delivery room? I was so scared and...
I said something to you.
Yes, you did. You got me through it. So if you mean it, if you really want to change, then yes, I'll stay.
Like, he obviously picked her for a reason. He did a lot of research. But I think she does, like, a really good job of, like, assuming this role. But I think that's also because, like, that's what she would do. And I think, like, that would be really, I don't know, like, in this situation, you'd want to be, like, appeasing and all of this stuff. And she, like, doesn't do that. So I think she does a really good job.
I know that we all have different methods of processing our feelings and communicating, but that's not your wife. And the way that Ramona responds might not be the way that Brittany responds.
Yeah, it's definitely like a move, but I don't know.
I mean, dramatically, I loved it. Does it make perfectly logical sense? No.
Does it make any sense? Like, also no.
As a wife, if my husband, like, I would be more apt to, like, accept him as a serial killer if he was, like, more present as a father and a husband. If Elias was just, like, really, like, being there and being present and helping with the kids and being loving to her, and then he was like, listen, like, I need to stop. I need help. Like, I feel like that's a better way to go to keep your family together than to, like, abandon her and be like, this is my plan, so that your daughter's like, is this forever? And then you walk off into the sunset. Like, I'm sorry. I'm like, how in the crap does he actually think that this is going to, like, she's already so upset at him. Like, this is just going to push her over the edge. I'm not saying that I would condone if my husband was a serial killer, but I would definitely have more space in my heart to forgive and try to be understanding if he was a better husband.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah. And then not only, like, did he leave, but he hasn't, like, contacted her in the 10 days that he's been gone. Like, not even, like, a text, like, I'm alive sort of thing, which is obviously not a sign that you're willing to change. Like, I don't know.
I'm excited for him to get caught, but I still am interested in him as a character a lot. But my big question regarding him, as I know we've talked about this before, we still don't know why the fuck he's doing any of this shit. We understand there's trauma with his uncle, and we're going to learn more about his parents and stuff, but we still don't know, like, why he set up this whole, like, national serial killer, like, experience.
And why not a single woman is part of it.
Yeah.
I guess maybe he feels like he can't really manipulate women the way that he can manipulate men. I don't know. So after their little roleplay exercises is over, he has Ramona call her husband to let him know that she's not in any danger and left because she just needed a break. Basically, Elias just wants to make sure that the police aren't looking for Ramona.
If you really want to, you can make this difficult, and you can describe me, you can tell them what you know about me.
I won't do that.
No, I know you won't. Because the bottom line is this. No matter what happens, it isn't you who should be afraid. It's your husband, Gerald. It's your children, Andrew and Ariana. Because if it's not me, it'll be someone else who comes to hurt them.
I understand.
Ramona? What's going on? Me and the kids are so worried.
Fine, honey. Just calm down.
Tell me where you are. I'll let the police know and they'll come and get you.
No, Gerald.
You have to call the police back, and you need to let them know I'm not in any danger.
Okay, this doesn't make any sense, Mona. I mean, you don't even sound like yourself.
It's me. And I'm completely safe.
And you get this shot of her husband, and you're like, oh, this is kind of an Adam Driver-esque looking guy.
Oh, I was like, are you about to hit a wall?
Oh my God. Every day I wake up thinking about how my wife is kidnapped by a psychopath.
Luke and Tara are reviewing the file from the fire in which Elias's parents died. And based on the report, they believe that the reason Cyrus took the boy in is because he knew that he had killed his own parents.
So Cyrus got a state stipend to raise his nephew?
Yeah, until he was 18.
Okay, and then what? I mean, there's no record of Lee Duval after his 18th birthday.
None whatsoever. As far as anyone's concerned, this kid falls off the face of the planet.
How do we know he's not one of Cyrus's victims?
He could have been, but do you know how his parents died in an apartment fire? Take a look at the fire marshal's report on that fire.
Portable electric heating unit in child's bedroom compromised.
Right, which investigators conclude is accidental wear and tear.
Okay, but the 10-year-old survivor was initially thought to have perished in the blaze and was later recovered at a nearby park.
Right, now listen, I know I'm saying this without a lot to go on here, but it would explain Cyrus's curious bond with his young nephew if...
if he knew that he killed his own parents.
Penelope comes to let them know that the Indio police just informed them that Ramona Havner is missing and she fits Sicarius' victimology perfectly. Even though the case is technically closed, Emily sends Rossi, Tara, and Luke to California to investigate. And now we cut to a middle-aged man sitting on the bleachers at a park when he gets an encrypted text from Elias telling him time to get back to work. He answers Elias's call and tells him that he isn't like the others because he follows the rules.
The heat on the network is cold.
I'm ready.
Good.
I'm not like the others.
I know.
I follow the rules.
Yes, and that is why you survived. And that is why I have another gift for you.
While the BAU is mid-flight, Penelope informs them that the Indio police just updated the case, saying that Ramona's husband got a call from her saying that she was okay. So the police reclassified it as a domestic squabble. However, Ramona has still not come home, so the team decides it's still best to keep investigating until she does come home. Mid-call, Ramona's car is located abandoned in a parking lot, which we know is part of the Sicarius like rule book or whatever. Elias tells Ramona that she is going home because she has given him what he needed, and then he drugs her as a precaution. Instead, he leaves her body in a car for the new NSUB to come and pick her up.
Oh my God. For Baldy McRope Happy to come get her.
Yeah, Mr. Forget-Me-Nots himself.
With that bald head. Like, what is that introductory scene where we see him sitting on bleachers in a park? I would have loved to see, like, what is his job? Like, him at his job to kind of, like, provide more background on him as a character. Because all I know now is he's bald and he really likes knots.
Now the team has made it to California. While talking to Ramona's husband, Rossi has a revelation when the husband ignores a phone call from his mother-in-law.
Pulling up the footage now. Okay.
It's not a wallet. He's not trying to pick his own pocket. It's a phone.
I mean, maybe.
For some reason, somebody tried to reach him, and he ignored that somebody. Twice. Now, what's the timestamp on the footage?
9:20 p.m.
Okay, the boss and a co-worker are out. They wouldn't call that late. It could be a wife.
Why wouldn't he want to talk to his wife?
Because she's getting in the way of his next murder.
Oh.
All right, do me a favor. Pull down the cell records for the tower closest to that hardware store. Make a list of all the missed calls. Then give me a second list of the missed calls originating from the Pacific Northwest.
You don't like it when I say this, but that's going to take some time.
Penelope, I'm not being mean here. I'm not being bitchy. This is not the old rumpled Rossi who needs to go into therapy over his dead wife.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. You actually do need to go to therapy. But this is where I say I need more time. You say we don't have any time. And then I save the day anyway. How about that?
It's like you know me.
Love you. Mean it.
Thanks.
Before they hang up, they have kind of a cute moment and avoid getting under each other's skin like they've done in the past. So I thought that was a really cute scene. On a group call, Emily and JJ tell the team that the two remaining kill kits were acid and strangulation, and they had already found a user named forget-me-nots, spelled with a K, so not just the flower, which is a play on the fact that Indio has a forget-me-nots flower festival combined with that their kill method is strangulation. So cute little play on words there.
I'm sorry. I just have to interrupt. I got the text. I'm going to read it really quickly. Forget-me-nots says to Daddy Void on their fucking site, because women are inherently evil. It's just in their bones. Nothing but arrogance and antipathy. That goes for all women, .. especially everyone in insidious, quote, city of festivals. The obvious out-of-towners who come in with their heads up their ass, oblivious to those who surround them. They deserve nothing more than the end of a rope. And then Daddy Voight goes, amen to that. And then Forget-Me-Nots goes, you have no idea what I'm capable of on the wrong day. And Daddy says, I believe you. Tell me how you exact your justice. And Forget-Me-Not says, any woman who sits in the ivory tower looking down, .. Any woman who's all high and mighty, .. I'll squeeze the life out of them, .. Squeeze the air from their lungs, .. Done it before. And Daddy goes, don't leave me hanging, .. And Forget-Me-Nots goes, let's just say I left her hanging, .. The crime was well worth the punishment, .. And then Daddy goes, who? And Forget-Me-Not says, an awful she-devil, someone who was supposed to show love and compassion, but gave nothing.
Of the two kill kits that were never recovered, acid and strangulation were the two MOs that we were looking for.
So which one did Sicarius hide out here in Indio?
Well, to try and answer that, we went back to the beginning, to the dark web message boards.
The ones where Sicarius was holding his auditions?
The very same. After that, we cross-referenced with some messages Tyler Green had intercepted. And one alias stands out. Forget-Me-Nots.
Jesus, that damn name says it all.
Forget-Me-Nots refers to his disdain for the city of festivals, which is also a nickname for the city of Indio. Apparently, this particular incel-leaning unsub has a deep-seated compulsion to squeeze the life out of any woman he deems to be too high and mighty. And he also makes reference to a previous crime and punishment.
What you're describing sounds like a case from some years back. A guy named Arthur Keel tried to hang his grandmother in her backyard.
This unsub apparently is an incel-leaning unsub with compulsion to squeeze the life out of any woman he deems to be too high and mighty. So based on just that alone, the local Indio detective that's working the case is reminded of a man named Arthur Keel, who tried to hang his grandmother in her backyard.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah, for real.
So he was convicted of second-degree attempted murder and has been out on parole for 5 years. Meanwhile, Arthur is listening to the police scanner while tying up Ramona and hears the missing person call for her. He immediately calls Elias and is like, what the fuck, bro? You gave me damaged goods. Elias tells him to get rid of her and leave town for a while.
What did I tell you about calling?
You gave me damaged goods.
What are you talking about?
The entire Indio Police Department is on the street looking for her.
No, that's impossible.
Turn on a police scanner.
Okay, Arthur, listen to me. I need you to get rid of her and then get out of town for a while.
You hear me?
I do. If you try to pull your arms in to take the rope off your neck, it's gonna choke you. Unless, of course, you prefer to end things quick. But waiting it out won't work either, because eventually, your legs are gonna give out on you. And you're gonna hang yourself. It's a damn shame. I'm gonna miss the whole thing.
Arthur then finishes setting up Ramona's noose and leaves as the BAU is arriving at his house. Luke sees him pulling up to his house and the police corner him. Arthur gets out of the car and starts running, which always ends super well for criminals when it's Luke Elvis in pursuit. And it's always like old dudes too. I'm like, how do you think you can outrun Derek Morgan? How do you think you can outrun Luke Elvis? Just like, like make it make sense. And it doesn't. It never does.
They aren't the spring chickens they think they are.
Yeah, maybe the unsub from the last episode who was described as older and physically fit could have done it, but I don't think so.
I don't think so. So, shocker. Arthur gets caught at a dead end, and then he starts shooting at Rossi and Luke as they arrive in their SUV. Rossi tries to talk him out of shooting himself, and he almost does it too. Like, you can tell that he's kind of like contemplating just, you know, like turning himself in or whatever. But then Arthur does end up raising the gun again to shoot at Rossi, and instead Rossi shoots him twice in the chest, and he dies at the scene. Meanwhile, they don't know where Ramona is, and she is slowly suffocating. Penelope eventually finds that Arthur's grandparents owned an industrial fabrication company that went out of business, and the building was condemned last year. By the time Tara and Luke arrive, Ramona is unconscious and does not have a heartbeat. After performing CPR, Luke gets her breathing again, and it appears she's going to be all right. When Tara comes to see her at the hospital, Ramona remembers the threat that Elias made against her husband and children and says that she never saw his face.
I'm just glad that Ramona was okay, because I was really rooting for her. And I was going to be sad if she got. However, I'm like, there's a way that she can tell them who it was. Like, I'm sure there's a way that she, like, I don't know. I was just like, please, Ramona, like, I understand that he threatened y'all and your family.
I mean, it was a total bluff. There's nothing he's going to fucking do. Like, you know, like he may act like he knows, but what's he going to do? She's now under surveillance by the FBI.
Exactly. Unless we're like Scream 5 up in this bitch.
Tara, like, she can tell right away that he must have like threatened her family or something. So she's like, just give her some time and she'll like come through or whatever.
Yeah, we got two more episodes to get through, so at some point, she probably gives us a sketch.
Penelope calls Rossi with a list of numbers from the Pacific Northwest.
Penelope.
Hello, you beautiful creature. I found the cell phone tower by the hardware store in Chattanooga. I have compiled a list of numbers that pinged off of that cell phone tower in a 9-minute window.
You can't narrow that down more?
Amazingly, I can't. I'm vexed about it, but the time signature from the surveillance video itself is off plus or minus 4 minutes, so it's a very thick window, but it's the narrowest I can give you, and I emailed it to you just now.
And you were able to identify calls from the Pacific Northwest?
Yes, which I took to be the official mapping of calls originated from Oregon, Idaho, Washington.
And what does that leave us with?
I believe the scientific term is a bazillion names and numbers.
All right, no problem. Thanks. Great work.
Apparently, there's a ton of callers. Which I was like, how many people are calling from the Pacific Northwest to Chattanooga? I thought that list would have been relatively short. But anyway, apparently there's a lot of them. But it's better than what they had before, I suppose. So just at this point, without Ramona's cooperation, they still don't have enough for Emily to go to the Attorney General to reopen the case. But Rossi decides that he's going to go door to door of the people who may have called Sicarius that day.
He's like, we're going old school. I love that. A man with a plan. Now that's a proper plan. I love to see him on the ground doing the work. Like, I just feel like he nailed that.
So now the case is wrapping up a bit, and we're back at JJ's house. She and Will finally talk to Henry and apologize for not telling him that Will was getting tested for a possible cancer diagnosis. Henry has also been keeping a bat under his bed for protection against Sicarius because he knows that JJ has been investigating and thinks that Sicarius may come for them, which is like a lot for a 14-year-old to deal with. He asks for JJ to tell him like something about the case so that he doesn't have to keep imagining the worst. It's really wholesome and also crazy that this boy is an actual teenager now. Like, we've literally watched him grow up, and that's crazy. But anyway, everything seems like the Lamontagnes and Giroux are feeling a lot better, even though all the crazy shit that has happened recently.
Yeah, they've really gone through it, that family. So it's good to see them on the other side of this.
Yeah, you know, getting blown up and not having any sort of physical tell of that.
Girl, he perfected the famous La Montaigne frittata during lockdown. At least we forget.
Yeah, his eggs aren't old.
Oh, shit!
Back to the explosion, because I'm still mad about it too. But I guess like he did keep calling for them to like get out of there before he blew it up. So I suppose that would be why they weren't like thrown.
But we didn't see that. We didn't see that. We heard the like the telephone ringing, and then Luke was like, that's a bomb. But like we heard one telephone ring or two, and like there just wasn't enough time. Like, I think they could have, like, solved that by him actually calling and them getting out, or, like, giving them enough time where they got out, got far away, and then it blew up. That would have solved the whole thing, because they're still traumatized. They still, like, saw their life flash before their eyes, but they were able to, like, get all the way out. But the fact that they were, like, yeeted out of it by an explosion, I'm just, like, I don't know. I think it's a little crazy.
No, for sure. I think it's sus, but like based on what they said, that's like, I guess how they're justifying it. But I'm not convinced, but I guess.
I'm not convinced. I'm not pleased.
You know, it is what it is, I suppose. Finally, Elias calls Sydney for the first time since leaving 10 days ago.
Hello?
Hey, it's me.
Aren't you going to say anything?
No. I'm not the one who should be doing the talking right now.
How are the girls?
Well, it's been 10 days. 10 days since you walked out of this house. No phone call, no text, nothing.
You know what I did this weekend? I Googled your name, followed by the word dead.
And as terrified as I was to find something, at least that would make sense.
He's going to be coming home by tonight, apparently. After they hang up, she's like, you know, she's like pretty distraught still. She throws her phone on the floor. Like, I've done that before, you know, like dramatic queen. While she's sitting there in her feels, the doorbell rings at the Voight household, and who other than David Rossi is at the door asking Sydney if he can ask her a few questions.
So good. So good.
Such a good ending. Such a good cliffhanger.
I know. I was like, holy shit.
Like, it ties everything together so well, and like, yeah, it's amazing. It's so good.
And I wasn't expecting it to be Rossi either. Like, I knew that he was on the phone, but I was just like, oh my God, like, he's already there. Like, it's already happening.
Yeah, she was probably one of the first calls, and he got to her. Or maybe she's the first call. Like, Oh, I love that. I mean, I just think that that's so well done, that like suspense. And I also like a lot of what Sydney says in this episode and what she said in the last episode. And I think she's like a really strong character who like doesn't take any shit. And she's just kind of struggling with like trying to keep her family together and keep the kids taken care of. And like, I like that, you know, he'll say stupid shit and she'll be like, no, like you're the one who walked out. I didn't tell you to leave. Like she, and in the last episode, she tells him to like not pin the whole like lying situation on her. Like, you know, if you're being honest, you're being dishonest, and that's your choice. Like, that has nothing to do with me.
Kind of both sides of the coin. Like, we see, like, she can be, like, a nurturing mother, but she's also, like, doesn't take any shit, which I think is cool.
So, should we rate this episode?
Yeah.
What do we think about the criminal slash serial killer? So I think we have to look at both Voight and Baldy McFlower Face.
Maybe like 15. I feel like they're good, but like, what is Elias thinking?
I feel like the stuff with Sicarius and like taking Ramona and all that was really cool. Like, I was very into that. It like, it held my interest. I was like, where the fuck is he going with this? Arthur, I found a little pathetic.
Okay, we could do a 15. What about character development / character arcs?
I really liked what was going on with Penelope and Rossi in this episode. I feel like there were plenty of opportunities for them to, like, go back to their, you know, former selves where they're, like, at each other's necks, but they weren't.
Oh, and Garcia and Luke as well.
Yeah, and then we got the Giroux household stuff, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, maybe we could give this, like, I'd be okay with anything from, like, a 12 to a 15.
Let's do, like, 15. Yeah.
Okay.
Forensics in context.
I don't know. Like, some of it seemed like it was a little fast in terms of, like, they just narrowed in on the guy and that was the guy. And we didn't get, like, a lot of the, like, discussion behind it. And we didn't get a profile in this one. So I thought it made sense that he was who he was. But I don't know. I just wanted to know a little bit more about him.
Forget-me-nots really got me.
Yeah, that was funny. It does make sense, though, because they have a lot of the information, I'm assuming, like, categorized already.
The stuff with Ramona, I thought, was just, like, with Sicarius and Ramona, like, I was really into that. I was like, ooh, where is this going to go? Yeah, I thought that was very suspenseful and, like, unpredictable of, like, what direction everything was going to go into.
I mean, we could give that another 15 then.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Script writing, I suppose, was pretty good. I thought it was actually really good, even if it wasn't necessarily realistic at times. I would say 20. I thought it was a good script.
Yeah, I like the whole Daddy Voight talking to Ramona and like getting her to trust him. I like their whole back and forth when he's, like, kidnapped her and he has to, like, get her to, like, you know, basically, like, threaten her into, like, working through this, like, fantasy conversation with him. I like Rossi and, like, Garcia working respectfully together, which I know was, like, character development, but I also like the way that it was expressed in the script.
Yeah, I agree.
20?
Yeah, yeah.
Background characters? I like Ramona a lot.
I think Ramona gets a 20, if that's okay with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's an 85.
Thank you so much, Jen. Where can people find and, like, follow you?
As always, I am still active on Instagram at heelsup.cm, so you can check me out there.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes. And thank you so much for listening. Write in and share all of your thoughts about everything. We have a link to comment in the show notes. You can use the form on our website. You can message us on any of our social media accounts, but we are most active on Instagram for sure. We have brand new merch.
I'm really excited about it. We uploaded it all yesterday.
Yeah, Abigail did a really great job of making these inane text things that I typed up look super cool on a shirt. We have a Patreon, so we give you ad-free episodes and a newsletter. And you can follow us on Subs Podcast everywhere. You can follow me, yournewapartment.tumblr.com.
And you can follow me on Instagram at little_gnome_facts.
Well, thanks for listening, you guys. And thanks for joining us, Jen.
Pleasure as always.
Yeah.